Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. On today's program, we are talking with Scott Black, author of the new book, How Many Ways Smart Am I? He is also the founder and CEO of Like It Matters, LLC, which is headquartered in Fort Worth, Texas. Scott helps in organizations and individuals maximize the potential they were created with, our innate skills and intelligence, how we're hardwired. As president of Like It Matters, LLC, he is the ultimate life coach, a motivator, and a change agent. Scott is certified as a human behavioral specialist and a master practitioner of neuro-linguistic programming, NLP. He specializes in transactional analysis, cognitive behavioral therapy, and multiple intelligences. Scott has conducted transformational leadership training for over 23 years in three countries. His transitional leadership classes are nationwide, and they provide executive and life coaching skills. His intellectual profile, a powerful tool, is what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the connection between how we're wired, how we're born, how we're created. We're going to take a look at the connection between our mind, how it's mapped, and, well, the map we have at our fingertips, literally. At our fingertips, we have fingerprints. There are no two fingerprints alike. Even identical twins do not have identical fingerprints. Fingerprints come into being early in our life, within the first 10 weeks of us developing in the womb. And that hardwiring, that map, helps us know how we learn, how we develop, our strengths, and our weaknesses. And I want to thank Scott Black for being with us on the show today, and I'm so excited to talk about this.
Well, glad to be here, Lee.
Scott came in yesterday, flew in from Fort Worth, and as part of prepping for the show, he did my fingerprints. And this morning, he shared that mind map, that revelation of how God hardwired me to deal with life and how I've adapted over time. So Scott, kind of give everyone an idea. Where does the connection between fingerprints and how your mind works come from? What's the research? Just kind of fill us in.
Well, thanks for having me, Lee. I appreciate being here. Yeah, it's unique. You know, as you said, Lee, our fingerprints are unique to us. The day you're born, day number one, your fingerprints are what they are. And if you live to be 120 years old, they never change. Yet every other line on your hands and your feet changes with experience. I find that fascinating. Except your fingerprints, they never change. About the 13th to 21st weeks, roughly in that time, your fingerprints start coming in. At the same exact time, Lee, your brain lobes come in. You have five fingers, you have five lobes. You have a right and a left. And so we believe that each finger is the pattern on that finger, that print is a mimeograph, is a copy of the program, if you will, in that lobe of the brain. And that's what, there's the connection right there. So the fingerprints, as unique as they are, they're unique to each individual. They tell us something about that person's brain.
Well, and it's kind of interesting to me that I know our spinal column, our brain, all that kind of things are the first things to form. But to find out in reading your book last night that our fingerprints are actually formed out of the same components and that connection. So
that weird.
You know, it's kind of a strange thing because, you know, as a Christian believer, I know God didn't do anything by accident. But you look at fingerprints and you think, well, why would they be unique? Why, you know, they're just there. Why? Yep. And then to think that there is that innate connection. Yeah. Between our fingerprints and how our mind maps.
Well, and if you think about it, Lee, it's really not that big of a stretch. You know, you and I were talking last night about the four blood moons and all that stuff.
Right.
You know, how the stars align and they tell a story. It's nothing by chance. I mean, and again, I know this, I'm a Christian as well. I know this might not be a Christian program, but the God of the universe who put all the stars in space, some will never see universes. The same God who knows every hair on our head, has them numbered, knows if a sparrow falls from the sky. That same God, to make the connection that these unique prints that nobody else has like you, that no other billions of people who've been born have them identical to you, to make the connection that that might actually tell me something about your brain, that's not that big of a stretch if you think about it.
Well, I mean, I know. I have two identical great uncles, and, you know, they were identical.
Yeah.
As you got to know them, as life experiences and things, they changed. But to think you know, one could dial the phone and the other would pick it up before it rang. They were that plugged in, that they weren't identical to their fingerprints. Their DNA was the same. Everything else was the same. But God gave them different fingerprints and different wiring.
And this is what's so powerful. We were on the 700 Club. I think that's where you saw us.
Right.
And I'll never forget Pat Robertson at the end. I never met Pat. He was just looking at the segment. He said, you know, he made a comment like, well, I just think some people want to put everybody in a box and they don't want to admit that we're unique. And I'm like screaming at the TV going, no, Pat, that's what this shows, how unique each person is. And that's the powerful piece here. We actually, you know, I've been in the field of helping people maximize the potentials they were created with. I mean, that's been my passion in my life. And what's great about this is this allows me to show someone how unique they are. See, the premise of the book, even though it goes into all the details of all the dermatoglyphs and how the fingerprints, how they have meaning, and goes into all the biology and all the case studies, really the important part of the book is the beginning of the book, where we start addressing that there's a crisis in this world. There's a crisis of belief. You know, what people believe today, Lee, you know this, is much different than what people believed 20 years ago. I mean, 30 years ago, we had just re-elected Ronald Reagan to the second term.
Right.
And now 30 years later, we re-elected Barack Obama to the second term, which, right or wrong, good or bad, I wouldn't say they're similar. Very different people with opposing views. It shows you how much our beliefs have changed. And one of the biggest struggles, I deal with it all the time, is in personal beliefs. People don't believe that they have what it takes to get where they want to go.
Well, I think, you know, when you go to school, I'll use grad school as an example. I went to Ohio State. And they gave us personality tests like in the first few weeks of that. And I can remember getting called into the program. I should have shared this with you earlier, but being asked to leave the program. And I'm like, well, why? They said, well, it's not designed for Myers-Briggs type like yours, which was, you know, infinitely intuitive, feeling, emotional type things. Versus they said, well, it's designed for the internalized, sensing, thinking type people. And I said, I'll be fine. You guys will go nuts.
Yeah.
Right. Because I would make it work my way. But that entire, if you don't fit in this box we've created, if you're not in the classroom learning a certain way, if it doesn't work, if you're not book smart.
That's it.
Or, you know, my brother is highly gifted with his hands and he can program computers and all that kind of stuff. Before there were screensavers, he was programming with pixels to make you know, his own screensaver. But that's not what schools recognized back then. I mean, and it's the same thing. So if we don't fit in the box, then we have issues. And we're labeled.
Well, the paradigms. You know, we have these paradigms, these belief systems. And you were talking about, you know, in school. And a lot of this belief system start in education. They're permeated in education. And this is why Dr. Howard Gardner, we had talked before about Dr. Gardner.
Harvard professor.
Yeah, Harvard professor, Dr. Gardner, in the early 80s, wrote a book called Frames of Mind. And he came up with the concept of multiple intelligences. Dr. Gardner worked with brain damaged people. He worked with early childhood development. And like you had said, he had a real problem with the paradigm of IQ and intelligence, that it was static, and if you had it, you had it. If you didn't, you didn't. You couldn't build it. And it was based on really two ideas. You were either logically minded or you were linguistically minded. You were good with words or good logically.
And either one was acceptable.
Absolutely.
But to be something other than those two didn't fit the model and didn't fit the way people
talk. Basically, get a farm job, get a construction job. I mean, no, nothing against farmers and construction. Please don't take it that way. But that would be relegated to that. And so Dr. Gardner came up with this 8 criteria he had, and he identified at the time early on 7 different ways, what he calls intelligences. We call them intellects. I believe it's more of an intellect. It's a capacity that God's given us. To me, intelligence is how that is developed, how it's process, how do you take in information and process it through that? And so Dr. Gardner actually identified now 8 different ways to be smart. And in this profile, we can actually identify, as we went over with you, the 8 different ways that Dr. Gardner identified to be intelligent, as well as a lot of other information as well.
Well, and I know it's a psychological term, but I frequently say I have multiple personality disorder because I can, you know, I do different roles. I can be the consultant. I can be the, you know, the radio host. I can write the books. I can do the speaking or whatever. And it doesn't matter what industry or whatever, but it's funny because that's actually what tested.
Oh, Yeah, your profile came out
right,
that way.
Yeah.
I looked at your profile last night, remember, and I texted you this morning. I said, genius, because you have very unique traits. And again, it just should have reaffirmed.
Well, we all are unique, but I'm more unique.
Oh, you're more unique, and it's not just because I'm on the radio with you right now.
He said I was weird. Now I'm just kidding.
But no, that's a great point. We're all unique, and no two profiles are ever the same. I get this a lot, Lee. I get, so is that normal? I'll tell someone something and say, is that normal?
But it's what is.
Yeah, and there is no normal. There is no normal. But on your thing, on your profile, your innate intellect evaluation, it was so cool because you have specialty traits in six of the 10 areas.
Well, let's talk about the specific areas and then talk what that means to have specialty traits.
Okay.
So what are the 8 intellects that we should be aware of, and how do they relate to the sections of the brain and to each finger?
Well, there are 8 intellects that Dr. Gardner identified, and what we can do in the profile is actually identify them. There's the 8 of them are the naturalist, musical, visual, logical, interpersonal, intrapersonal, linguistic, and those are the 8 of the multiple intelligences. Now, those are mapped in different parts of the brain. And by capturing the fingerprints, as you saw, it took about 5, maybe 10 minutes. Yours were a little unique.
I kept messing up with his system. So for those of you who know me well, and how I interfere with electronics, and it's a miracle I haven't ever fried the engineering board here.
Yeah.
I was messing with his system last night, and so it took us probably 20 minutes to get my fingerprints and not the normal 5.
And normally it takes 5. And so based on that, and then we had our scientists, I connected with our home office in India, and they dealt with the scientists, and they got it all turned around pretty quick. But it was interesting to see how your 8 intellects showed up and how 6 of the different intellects have a specialty, a plasticity, what we call the infinity, a reflective processor. And the cool thing about that processor, and we're able to identify it, is in those areas, Lee, you have unlimited plasticity. In other words, based on your experience and exposure, this one area could be 100 or it could be 0.
We don't know.
Yeah, no, but we did identify a few different areas. Yeah. Logically, anybody that knows Lee knows that she is really a logical person. Visually, incredibly off the chart visual. She can see things. She knows what fits in. She knows how it looks, what looks right and what doesn't look right. So we can identify certain areas that you were developed, it was exposed, and the strength is off the charts.
Well, and it was interesting to see because, you know, I'm 50 years old this coming Monday, every week from yesterday, and how life changed how you're wired.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be, just because your wiring is that way doesn't mean you always have to behave that way.
And that's the biggest thing. The one thing in the book over and over, and it'll be out by the end of the month.
And the name of the book
is How Many Ways Smart Am I? Introducing and Maximizing Your Innate Intellects. And so I want you to know, but one of the big overriding themes you'll hear over and over, you'll read it over and over, you'll see it over and over, is this. We want you to know you are smart enough. That's the key. You are smart enough, no matter where you find yourself in life, to take your God-given gifts, talents, abilities, and to take your life to wherever you want it to go. I'm a firm believer in that, Lee.
Well, I mean, we're designed to be for a purpose. We don't get all the strengths. We get weaknesses, so we have to lean on each other. So we come together as one body, according to the Bible. And we have different roles in it. And I think we're frequently told, well, you have to, these are your weaknesses, performance reviews.
Yep.
These are your weaknesses instead of these are your strengths, and let's put you in a job that does your strengths. So when you go through and, you know, and you're trying to decide, and I can remember back, and this is 26 years ago now, maybe more, as a 14-year-old going to IBM using the huge mainframes to take the test to see what your job skills, what positions you should go for. And I came out rabbi and advertising executive. And I was like, rabbi and advertising executive. I mean,
not very different, believe it or not.
I think the compensation levels might be
a little different. Compensation levels. Yeah.
But when you look at that at 14, and it was funny to see similar things in those categories when we were looking at it. But it's what you do. Like we've talked about, a lot of people have had adversity. We all have different issues growing up. No family's perfect. There's some kind of dysfunction everywhere. But depending on how much dysfunction or how much trauma, how many things that
and
we
what
do.
You, and the sense you made of it. Here's the key. It's really, and this takes me back now to my psychological background, if you will. the key is the meaning you make of it. See, we're little meaning makers. And this is where I go back to the structure of beliefs. Everything starts and stops with beliefs. Everything we do or do not do is driven by belief system.
Right.
And that's the beginning of the book. The first 100 pages is really goes into the structure of our belief. What you believe about something dictates it. Because
what you believe about yourself is what you manifest.
If you believe you're a waste of life,
right,
you're going to act as if. That powerful phrase, as if, I use it in goal getting a lot, you know, where we teach companies and executives how to accomplish goals. We're supposed to act as if. The problem is...
Fake it till you make
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
That kind of philosophy.
Yeah, and we do it all the time. You know, I do the example, I have someone put their hand out in front of them and cup it, and I have them imagine I put a freshly cut lemon in there. I cut it in half, lemon juice is dripping. I have them smell the lemon, then open their mouth and take a big bite, and they have this squinchy little face, and they're right. Tart looking, and I'm going, what are you doing? They go, well, it's sour. And I go, don't answer another question. I say, what's sour? There's no lemon in your hand. Put your hand down. You look crazy.
Right.
But their body acted as if. Their salivary glands excreted. They scrunched their face. Their mouth is still filling with saliva. But there is no lemon. That's fear. False evidence appearing real. There's no lemon, but my body acted as if there was, and so it responded accordingly.
Right, so if you imagine bad scenarios at work versus if you imagine getting the promotion or absolutely. Getting a good review or whatever. So it's how we've processed all those life experiences yep. in the context of how we're hardwired.
Yep. Now, think about this. If your people are constantly abandoning you as a 7-year-old girl or a boy, as a 10-year-old boy, you're being abandoned by family. Maybe you lose a couple family members. Maybe a coach moved away who you really liked. Now you start realizing, okay, something wrong with me. People don't like me. Now, how you frame that, I don't like me, I'm not special, never get close to people. To process it that way has a totally different set of consequences than to process it, okay, I'm a strong person, I can overcome, everything happens for a reason, at least I was blessed to have those people in my life a little bit.
A while, right.
So all that is the frame, and so many keys to life, Lee, is the frame that we put around something. The frame we put around something gives it meaning. You know, so many people, if you listen to them, Lee, they talk like this, I have to go to work. I have to take care of my kids. The frame they put around it is burden, if
right.
you hear it. But I always change it to reframe. What about if you get to? You have to or you get to? You mean you have to go to work or you get to go to work? A lot of people don't have jobs. A lot of people don't get paid for when they don't work.
Right.
You have to go to work or you get to? Well, I have to take care of my kids. Really? Do you realize how many people would love to have kids that can't? And I always say, let's be honest.
And how many people walk away from the kids?
Yeah, absolutely. How many people did have kids that never should have? You know, I mean, we always talk about that. So you have to take care of your kids or you get to. And it's the frame. And I was talking to you. What I kind of bounced around a little bit, Lee, without getting too personal, was the frame. Remember, I kept going, I wonder what the frame is. What is the frame that you put around it to create?
I was blessed. I have always known I was blessed. I had my parents were together, happily married for years until my dad died. I had both sets of grandparents. They were in the life. I have the aunts, the uncles. I had the cousins. I had the great aunts and the great uncles, the great grandfather. I mean, literally to the point that there was never a moment you knew there wasn't someone that you could pick up the phone and say, you know, whatever. And I joke, like I told you, I jokingly said I moved to Minnesota to go on a date by myself. But because you would run into people.
Yeah.
I mean, you were part of the community. You were raised by the community. They knew your history. And so you have that framework of, okay, you can do anything you want.
Yep.
I wasn't raised to think girls only did certain things or boys did, you know, and that stuff. It's like, you want to ride the motorcycle, ride the motorcycle. If you want to shoot the gun, shoot the gun. If you want to be president, be president. So,
well, it's your belief systems. And again, that's one of the greatest things, your experience and exposure that your family created was great belief systems. And you can see these in races. You can see it in national. I mean, I don't do politically correct. I don't think you do either. You look at the black community versus the Asian community.
Right.
Both come hardworking. All this stuff, you can look at one group and you decide which one is more of a victim mentality. One group is more, I'm going to do whatever it takes to get whatever I can. And I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying hardworking, all
well,
that.
Well, again, it's how are you going to accept how society frames things?
Yep.
Or are you going to frame things and believe, okay, I may not have parents. I may not have had money. I may not have had advantage or whatever.
Yep.
But I can become the richest person in
absolutely.
The world. Yeah, I can be Oprah Winfrey.
That's
right?
The frame.
All the things that she
and
has.
That's the frame. And that's, I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Viktor Frankl, you know, Man's Search for Meaning.
Right.
Love the book, Man's Search for Meaning. If your listeners haven't read it, they should read it. And while he was in Auschwitz, he came up with the concept of logotherapy.
Right.
When you can find meaning in anything, even suffering, then it has value. And really, you know, that's where it goes back to. No matter what we've been through, if we can frame it in a way that allows us to be more resourceful for ourselves and others, that's one of the keys that I coach my executives on, is the frame we put around something gives it meaning. Nothing really affects people. It's the meaning that we give it that truly affects it. If you put a positive meaning on anything, you can use it in a constructive way. If you put a negative meaning on anything, you can use it as a way to destruct something or use it in a more of a negative fashion.
So let's talk about right brain, okay, left brain, and how does it work? So how do inputs and outputs flow, and how does that impact right brain, left brain, and these eight intellects?
Yeah, there's two different pieces. You got the right brain, left brain, and I do a lot of work with right brain development. So the left side of your brain, basically, if you're right-handed, this is how it is. If you're left-handed, it could be different. Your left side of your brain is your hard drive. It's where you store stuff. All your programs, all your wiring, all your CDs, what I call CDs, LPs. You know,
your random access memory.
There you go. All that stuff is boom. It's your verbal side, your logical side. Your right side is your creative side, the special things that make us human beings, consciousness, thinking outside the box, emotions, all byproducts of the right side of the brain. And so what you're talking about is on page 6 of our 36-page profile, we actually give you a printout, and my wife loves to say this is your brain on paper. She always says that she turns to page 6 with a big
smile. You might
smile.
Want drugs after seeing your brain on paper.
And it shows the actual brain. It shows a cutout, a little picture, if you will, of the brain, and it shows the five lobes, the right and left side, and it shows the different fingers and what they correlate to. Just so you know, for your listeners, on the five fingers, you have five lobes. Your thumbs represent your prefrontal lobe, your index fingers, your frontal lobe, your middle finger is your parietal lobe, your ring finger is your temporal lobe, and your small finger is your occipital lobe.
So if you put your thumb on your forehead, yep, and moved your hand around,
yep,
each finger,
you can actually touch them.
You line up.
Yeah, it's
on
kind
that.
Of neat. And it's not square. They're not lined up exactly. But when you see the picture, you can see that. It's pretty cool. You can actually touch the lobes.
Visually, as a visual learner.
Really cool. Yeah.
You can picture. You can make that connection.
Oh, it's cool. And so what we do is when we map the brain up for you, we show you the five different lobes, the right and left side. And then we actually show you the top two are how you act and think. We call that output. And
right,
we call it output. And then the bottom three are how you take in information. We all have three channels. You know, I love transactional analysis, a lot of great work. And, you know, there's a stimulus and there's a response. And people always say, well, you made me yell at you, or you made me angry, or you
we
made me this.
We choose how we react.
Bullseye. But people always go, well, I don't get it. What do you mean? Well, the cool thing about transactional analysis is it shows you a clear picture.
I can't make you do anything.
And how do we know this? Because Christ said on the cross, forgive them, Father,
before
for they know
what they
that
do.
I always go back to that if I got a believer, because what happens is after the stimulus, before the response, we go into our three channels. We see something, we hear something or say something, or we feel something. Based on that, that's when we respond. And so those three channels we all occupy. We all have them. Some use a primary channel. Some use all three, pretty balanced. And so the bottom three sections are those three channels.
So the visual, the auditory, and the tactical.
Yep. Those are the only ways you can take in any information outside of
smell and taste.
You see
it, you hear it, and you touch it.
Yeah, and then you can smell and taste it too. And those are showed up in the different ways, as you know now. So, yeah, those are the three inputs. You see something, you hear something, or you do something. Those are the three inputs. And then the top two are acting and thinking, is what you do with that information.
Now, on the profile we did, it had two terms, reflective and affective. What are those, and what do they mean for when we're looking at this?
Well, and that's the cool thing. You know, there's, I think, 9 different pieces of data on this tool. I don't know if there's any Myers-Briggs, DISC. They all focus on 1 or 2 areas. This has like 9. I mean, I've never seen, and that's a great teaching tool, too. When I went through it, it went through a lot.
Well, and I'll interrupt really quick. There's a school in Mumbai, India,
yep,
that every kid that comes in, they do this with, to know how they learn and how they interact and how they're wired.
Yeah, Child's Quest Academy in Mumbai. And I got a chance to spend the day up there with Val and I, and stunned. I mean, each one of these kids, as they check in, and they go from 2 years old to like 8 or 9, and they're the only school in India that can actually teach Down syndrome children.
Wow.
And they take part of the enrollment process is they capture every kid's fingerprint, and then they have the report right there. And so we got a chance to sit in the class, and they teach according to the report. So they'll have a classroom where they'll have these 20 kids, and they'll have them in different sections, and the way they teach to them is phenomenal. And that's my goal. I think we could change education with this. I truly believe that we can remove majority of learning disabilities and all teaching disabilities, because there's a lot of learning disabilities that are really teaching disabilities.
Right, because you're not making the connection to process the information the way the child is wired.
Most teachers, and not all, we got great teachers. Some of my favorite people in my life have been teachers. But most people teach the way they've been taught. I mean, you know, the golden rule, you treat other people how you want to be treated. The problem with that is that's not you.
Right.
So why would you treat them the way you want to be treated if they are a different person? And that's the same concept. A lot of teachers are teaching just the way there's only one way to teach, and that's not true. There are technically many different ways to teach. And so in Mumbai, to see that, but with all this information on this report, where I was going mm-hmm. with, the two most important pieces to me, I believe, are the way we acquire information. I mean, do you take it in visually, auditorily, kinesthetically? What percentages? I think that's so important to how we get information from point A to point B. And the second part is what you just talked about, was the processors. Just so your listeners know, there are basically four fingerprint patterns.
Okay.
You have whorls, like it's like a swirl, like a target. You have arcs, which is like a tent, if you will.
Right.
And then you have loops. And then you have what's called composites or accidentals, mutts. It's just a whole bunch of stuff.
Amalgamations.
Yeah, amalgamations. She's a lot more educated than I am. Amalgamations.
I'm linguistic.
Yeah, there you go. Linguistic. There you go. So
see that little section over here?
There you go. The little one, yeah. So each one of those, this is how incredible God is. Each one of those patterns is actually the processor. And when I always explain processors, I'm a gamer. You know, I got three kids, one on the way. So we got Xbox 360. My kids don't know this yet, but there's a present in
there. They're not listening,
right? Yeah, really. They're Xbox One, which we're going to get soon, has a different processor. Your iPhone, the operating system 5 versus operating system 6.
Okay, it's like me using a Mac, a PC, and an
Bullseye.
iPad.
Different
because
processors.
Even though the Mac and the iPad are made by the same company, they operate differently.
Absolutely. So we got each one of these patterns is a processor. And so it tells you basically how that person takes in information. And that's what you're talking about. On page 13 of the report, we actually go through all this information. And what you're talking about here is the affective pattern, the reverse thinking processor, and self-cognitive. And then there's also a reflective, and I want to get that one for you as well. So those processors tell how that person takes in information in that area.
Well, and I will use mine. I don't.
Yeah, you got page 13 there. If you go to
my reflective score was 60%,
yep.
And I had an arch.
Yep. You
and so, what does that say about me?
That means in that area, in that part of your brain, you take in information. You have unlimited plasticity, meaning depending on your experience and exposure, that one area could be 100 by itself, or it could be 0. If it's not developed properly, if it's not have a positive influence, you can be a perfectionist. You can be very critical. That's what drives you to learn a lot. And based on, again, how you feel about the learning environment, if it's a good environment, if it's positive, depending on what's driving you, how you framed it. You know, some people want control.
I'm collecting the alphabet, and that drives me now.
There you go. You know
what
I'm
saying? So we were talking about, because I have all these letters after my name, more letters after my name than in my name.
Yeah.
And what drives me, and it's just like, well, I've always liked to learn. I guess that's the driver, because no one's making me collect those letters.
Yep.
And so that's the fun part.
My question as a coach, so what does getting all that data give you?
It's fun.
Yeah.
See, enjoyment. Yeah, it's literally.
And you go through enough of those questions and you actually find exactly the driver, if you will, what's driving that. Not that it's that important, but I like to know as I'm working with people, what's the driver? What's driving people?
I'm a type A personality that
I've got to
that likes to
right.
collect the entire alphabet. So we're talking about reflective. Let's flip to the one that was not me at all, which was reverse thinking.
Reverse thinking to me, and I know you felt a little bad about this because you wanted some of this one. I know you did. You wanted some of this one. Reverse thinking is one of my unique traits. I actually have that in my creative loan. And again, I'm not saying this has been okayed by India at all, but to me this is the Iron Man complex. You know, when he's standing in front of Jarvis and he puts his hand up, he starts moving things all over.
Oh, that Iron Man.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Okay,
that
I was thinking Iron Man is in the Iron Man contest, it didn't compute.
No, I'm thinking the superhero Iron Man.
Okay.
For me, it's the ability to process so many different scenarios. This person's usually a lot more critical. They can play a devil's advocate. They can always play the what if game. If you remember, Hewlett-Packard had that commercial one time. What if? This type of person, this processor, is the what if game. Can handle all different scenarios, can handle objections before they
happen. Right, and we were thinking about that because I guess mine, what I'm thinking about is like, I'm able to say, today I look at the pads and I know where it's like, so when I left Ford, I said in 10 years, Ford will be an X point. And like, you can't know that. And then, you know, within a couple months of the 10 years, somebody calls and says, how did you know that? But I could see the pads, which you're saying is different than this reverse
thinking. Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. But you're talking about more of a logical. To me, what you just explained to me is a logical, clear, and you could see it so clearly. Not only could you see it, it was so clear. So, but you're logically minded, and you're gifted, like I said, in a couple of those lobes. I think Ford made a big mistake. They should have listened to you and kept you around.
Okay, if they want it now.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, and it's interesting because also in corporate environment, because I was in many corporations, Ford was a great training ground, and I learned a lot of things there. But again, that environment, we were talking about it, is that there's an expectation of how you present yourself, of how you act and interact. And Ford was probably one of the best examples, is that they put you in the cube and the box and say, perform this way. But then I always said I was like life cereal Mikey. You know, Mikey will eat anything. Well, it was Lee would fix anything. So if they didn't have structures and that stuff, or they had a problem that didn't fit the norm, here, Leo figured out, but then it was like, go back to behaving like everybody else, which just doesn't work. I'm not good at staying in the
cubicle.
But some
people play the game.
Right.
You know that, and you see it all the time. I played the game for 30 years. It's my shot. You know, the person who's going to be CEO, they've been there for 30 years. They've just checked the
boxes.
I
just wanted to sit in the chairman's seat right away, so I did anytime I had the opportunity.
You mean, Lee, you didn't fit in the box? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not a good, which is probably why it's my first book was called Out of the Cubicle and Into Business. I had to get out of that cubicle and that box. But that expectation, you know, you interview with different places and the characteristics that they look for. So, you know, the soft spoken, no energy, even keel brushes is just not me. Yep. And those kind of things. And so we see people mirroring and reflecting how things are going. In case that listeners are hearing a loud voice, there's probably 50 kids outside the studio just yelling and screaming and waiting. So
it happens wherever I go, Lee. Sorry.
Oh, you brought them with you. Okay. Yeah. So that was an imported mom.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's interesting to see, yes, there are some things you can cope with, but it's also a matter of choice. So would I do the same thing every day, repeatedly, consistently, over and over for 30 years? No, that is just like intellectual suicide and stress to me.
Now, take a man in his early 30s who has a wife, two kids, and one on the way. And all he knows is that job.
Right.
What do you think he does?
He probably stays. Yeah. And
miserable.
And yeah.
Drinking, heavy drinker, probably gets a divorce 10 years later.
I think I worked with a lot of those guys.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's what, again, your framework. What is important? What decisions do you make? What are you willing to sacrifice or give up?
That's why it always goes back to the basics of what drives you.
What are your values?
And that's why one of the first things, the existential questions, and I always do this all the time, Lee, is who are you? Why are you here? You know, when I take my kids, I was a single dad for about almost 10 years, maybe 8 years. When I take my kids to school, there's always two things. I tell them, be a leader. I kiss them, say, be a leader, because people are always looking for people to follow. And number two, I'd always say, remember who you are.
Right.
Remember who you are. I mean, and that sounds strange to a lot of people, because they're a child of God, and they're here to serve, not be served. They're a conduit. Everything we have is God's, and we're supposed to use it for His glory. So, I mean, those belief systems structure, and corporations have belief systems.
Right.
What are the corporate belief systems? We might call them mission statements, vision steps, but a lot of those that are espoused aren't truly lived.
Well, not just that. I could say something else, and that kind of prompts something else, but the other thing is, we tend to think of corporations as these entities. Well, corporations are people.
Yep.
And they reflect those values of whoever's leading that organization and all of those kind of things. So we bring together people that are like us to work in organizations.
We hope so.
And when an organization brings in somebody that doesn't fit that prescribed parameter, and they know they want that person, but they still want you to go through all those key steps, which I think was one of the faults of the mentoring program and the development program.
It's incongruent.
Right. Is that you want somebody to come in and does all these different things, but then to get them from where you give them the entry point to where you want them to function, I'm not going to spend 20 years getting there and dealing with all the stress and the people and the mud or the clay that you run into that just kind of tries to hold you back. It's not who I am, and I don't think it's effective to organizations. And so when we're applying how our intelligence works, how we're structured, again, we have to know who we are.
Yep.
We have to know the strengths, they have the weaknesses.
And this is why this is so unique. There's no other tool out there like it. This is why we're going to change corporate America. Because what this does is this allows any boss, right, This allows any boss to see clearly. When I sit across from you, I can turn to page 4 of this and say, this is me. That's why we call it the me page. If you turn to page 4, I think it is, it's the me page.
My innate.
And it has all that data there. Imagine going into a CEO or training director that knows everything about this person, how they take in information, which people can learn on their own. See, on those processors, a self-cognitive person, they're self-driven. They can self-starter. They can drive themselves. They can do themselves. If you have an effective person, you got to be aware, because this effective processor is driven by their environment. And so certain people aren't self-driven. Certain people, if they're around negative people, they'll become negative. If they're around positive people, they'll become positive.
Well, and I think more of the world is that way than not, because you see that virus of anger. And in your book, you have the Cherokee little Cherokee story. And if you can, kind of share that, because I think that's symptomatic of what.
Oh, you talk about
the little legend about the grandfather.
When he's calling out. Yeah, absolutely. And he says, you hear the two voices.
Right.
You hear the two voices. Which one do I listen to?
Right. So the evil voice or the good voice? Am I going to be angry, jealous, bitter, envious, all of those kind of things? Or am I going to be positive, happy, outgoing, all of these kind of things?
And the simpler way to do that is a simple one. I don't remember where I heard this. Two men sit behind bars. One sees mud. The other sees stars. You can go back to...
Do you look up or do you look down?
Yeah, and it goes back to that framing again. You know, what are we feeding? And that's what the Cherokee said. Which one are we feeding? Are we feeding the anger, the bitterness? I mean, you know, we have a reticular activating system. You know this. We have the stem in our brain. It's at the unconscious part of the brain. And it's the brain's focal center. It's like the TV set, the tuner. And if you focus your reticular activating system on the Life Ain't No Fair channel...
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
That's all you're going to see.
You're going to see it everywhere. There's so much mass data to support why Life Ain't No Fair. And I tell a lot of people, if you read that good book, the Bible, you're going to learn two things. Number one, life ain't no fair. And number two, life's hard. So put your big boy pants on. I mean, if I read the Bible, that's what it tells me. And so the key is, how do you frame it? It's that logotherapy. It's how do you make sense of it? How do you take what you've been through? And now if you focus on it ain't fair, nobody likes me, you'll see it over and over and over. I always equate it this way, Lee. If you got your TV set parked on ESPN, why would you expect to be watching SpongeBob? You know, I mean, if you were focused on Fox News.
I think he guest hosted.
Yeah. You know, Fox News, you wouldn't expect to see Telemundo.
Right.
I mean, it's wherever you park it, that's what you're going to see.
Well, and when we're looking at those aspects of it, where our framework or our perspective, so our past experience with an interviewer will frame how we see that that question or that interaction with the next interviewer if we've had a bad experience. If we've had bad relationships, we either repeat those relationships or we avoid relationships.
Yep.
And so, or we settle for a relationship.
It's a world of settling. Yep.
Yeah. So it's like, I've been single all my life because I wasn't settling.
Yep.
So when God gives me the one, if he ever does,
yep,
then that's it. But I'm not settling for something that's not correct. And until God says, okay, that one, and he hits me overhead with a stick and drags me off. It's not.
No, but
happen,
you have
right?
that belief system
right.
firmly ensconced.
Right.
It ain't going anywhere.
No, it's hardwired.
Yeah, it's there. Know? Yeah.
But that's also in our leadership styles. We come in and at Ford, they recruited me, and I can remember one of the executives saying, "We were told you could be led, but you couldn't be managed." And I was like, "It's like so. Yeah, you can." I can logically figure it out. That's a valuable goal. That's not a valuable goal. This is the achievement or this is whatever. But you can't make me or manage me to make me do something. So whether that was how they wanted information presented or, you know, other things, that's not going to happen if it's not within that value system. So it was a funny thing. And they said, we didn't quite know what he meant when he said that. And now we do.
Well, but you have a hierarchy of values. And see, again, and this is what thing, this will actually address that. As I use this when I'm coaching people, this tells me a lot about their values, what drives them, all those things. And so it goes back to the strength of your values, who you are. You know who you are. The first questions I ask people, who are you? Why are you here? You know, if today was your last day on this planet, did it matter one bit, Lee, that you occupied that body, you took up space? You know, I always start with that spiritual intellect, that existential intellect. I grab people's heart, and once I can get them emotionally involved, then I can work through the mind. I get work on people's minds, but I go through the heart.
Well, and I'll kind of switch to politics for a moment, because I think that's the two the two wirings of the different parties.
Yep.
The conservative party is logical on going through this and ignores the emotion. This seems to be the obvious thing, where I think the liberal party is on the emotional side, right? And they make that connection. Both are wrong in the standpoint of you have to deal with the whole person. You have to deal with the emotional. You have to deal with the physical. You have to deal with all of those kind of things. And the people who succeed in getting elected are those who make that connection and bring someone in.
Well, Dan Goldman, you know that. We talked about it. You know, emotional intelligence. You and I both have studied emotional intelligence. And I don't know. I've seen so many pastors say it. But, you know, the greatest distance in any one person's life is from their head to their heart.
Right.
You know, it's the grand chasm for most people. And emotional intelligence is the intelligent use of emotions. I mean, it sounds almost diametrically opposed. But it's the intelligent use of emotions. You know, I use the example, if I had lost one of my kids and you showed up to their funeral telling a joke, laughing out loud, I'd punch you. Now, I'm not saying that laughing and telling jokes is inappropriate, but at that moment, that was not the appropriate use of that emotion.
Well, and it comes down to how we've learned to adapt or deal with our environments.
Yep, that's the key.
And did we mature in how we've done that?
Yep.
Because we can still, I mean, if we're 50 years old and we're still acting like a 2-year-old when we don't get our way, we haven't matured and adapted to the
environment.
Speaking
of not maturing.
Yes. So we have a lot of antics going on outside the studio of people trying to get their attention and stuff. So faces are currently plastered against the glass windows and there's all kinds of stuff going on. So it's kind of distracting.
That's right.
So whenever we go through doing this and when we're trying to lead others, when we're trying to help them be the best they are and value who they are. So it's not, we're not good or we're not bad. Yep. We're not right or we're not wrong. We simply are.
Yep.
This is the way we are. But our choices can be good or bad,
absolutely,
right or wrong.
And that's why I love when I work with people in transactional analysis, because you know anything about the ego states, you know it's all about choices. And so that's the key, though. And what we can do is we can create environments. This is what I do. I help create an environment for better choices to take place, more better resourceful choices. And the key is, though, to make sure that that employer, that team leader, knows who that person is. How do they take in information? Should they be talking more in visual predicates?
Right.
If I'm talking to Lee, I'm going to talk about having a clear picture. I'm going to talk in visual. I'm going to talk about a clear understanding. I mean, I'm going to use visual pictures. If Lee's talking to me, she's probably going to use more auditory language, maybe more kinesthetic. Why don't we touch base next week? Hey, I'm really wrestling with this. You know, we'd be able to understand the language.
And again, when we look at our language choices, I see what you mean.
Yep.
I hear what you're saying.
Yep.
I mean, I feel you.
I feel it.
Yeah. Those are clues to vocabulary clues to how people are processing.
They're called predicates,
right.
The cool thing is, I always teach this, that no one can actually read anybody else's mind. People think I read their minds. I don't. What I do is I take external data, and the external data tells me what's going on in someone's internal experience.
Right.
And so external data is words, gestures, emotions, eye movements. I was watching your eyes this morning as you were talking. I actually told her exactly what she was doing, and she said, hey, I'm doing that, because I could see you doing it. And so,
well, and you know, in body language classes you take, they say, well, if somebody's looking down in this way, it means they're lying. No, it just means they're processing differently.
It could mean they're lying.
It
could be. But if you're talking to kinesthetic, I very rarely look up at you. The only reason I look at you is
He's looked out the window. He's looked to the side. He looks down.
Yeah.
But,
because I'm kinesthetic. My emotions are down here. So I talk and auditory people, look at my head tilted. Auditory people always have their head tilted. It's like a listening posture. Because as I'm having a conversation with your audience, so the head's tilted and all that. Yeah.
Well, and you can also mirror things.
Match or mirror.
You learn to, because when we were going over my things, corporate world was a world of being non-expressive when you're exchanging information. And I fell back into that mode.
Yeah,
and it was kind of freaking him out. And so it's just like, no, it's just, you know, whenever information comes in, my processing, you know, I screen.
Logic. You got to logical, right?
I screen, it goes in, you know, you disengage from certain things, and then it processes, and now an hour later or whatever.
Yeah, she was moving the pages for me, which no one ever does. She's moving the pages.
I
got enough information. Yeah, she did her own fingerprints. I mean, unique. We've done about 160 of these now in America, so never experienced that.
And things have to be fast. So for those who know me well in the listening audience, slow is not a mode I know.
Yeah.
And so when I'm processing information, you're going to lose me if you don't go the speed that it is.
I kind of saw that. I would start flipping and start moving on because she was going. She was way ahead of me. Okay, we done? I've been done for a few minutes now.
So it's like, that's why independent study courses in undergrad were ideal, because the it was just me and the professor. Come get the notes, come get the stuff.
Perfect.
Pop in and out, you know, and I could finish a class in 3 weeks and they'd pop up another one. It was just, and it was taught how I needed them to be taught. That's why I'm doing a distance program for my master's now, because I can manage the information and do it the way I want it to do versus showing up in a classroom, sitting there and torturing a professor knowing if I'm not interested, I'm going to disengage during that class. If something else catches my attention, I'm going to disengage. And that's...
You know yourself, which is one of your highest traits in your profile, is your self-awareness. Very self-actualized. She knows herself. She's square with it. She doesn't need anybody else. I mean, she does like people to like her, don't get me wrong, but she knows who she is.
People will argue with that.
She, we all do it. I always talk about it in class. It's a wall every human being possesses. I have a very small one. It's a very small wall, but it is a wall. But for some people, it is the great wall. You know that. I mean, if they don't, people don't like them, nothing else matters.
Yeah, because it's, and again, it's, you'd like to be liked, but it's not necessary.
I'm the same
way. But some people are, it's their lifeblood. If people don't like me, they're deeply wounded.
It goes to the core of who they are, existentially. So, I mean, it rocks the world.
Well, and it's the external versus being an internal person. Are you defined by what people see?
Yep.
And things, or are you defined by how you define it and how you present it to the world?
Yep. See, it's a control thing, because yours is visual, but the difference is you just pinpoint it. It's not what other people see. It's how you present it to the world. You're in control of what other people see. This is the and I'm sorry, I don't mean to cycle.
No, that's okay.
But that's the difference for you, so pinpointed accurately. It's still you. Yeah, you're aware of what people see and all that. The difference is you're in control. You're like the producer.
Hey, you put out, yeah. I mean, and it's funny. I can remember because I was in banking for a while. And my first career out of undergrad, it didn't last that long. But how you dress. So if you dressed as I can remember the company I worked for when I moved down here, I was brought in because I was considered overdressing. Well, I dressed as I did for Ford. I dressed as an executive. And that was like, well, that's, I know. And for a long time trying to figure out, then I was underdressed or whatever.
Yeah.
But it was how they wanted to see the perception of what role I was in versus, you know, and I'm wearing it today. Yeah. If I want to wear animal print, that doesn't change how my mind is going to process everything. Yep. I'm more known for bright colors, wild patterns. You know, if I pull out my black suit, it's probably because it's a funeral and it's got a really wild shirt under it and it pops the shirt. But, you know, it's that visual thing. I dress because of how the visual works for me.
For you. And then you put that out there. And that's the key. And I wanted to, it really ties us into this, the processor we were talking about. We were talking about the processor, the effective processor. That is the most prevalent. You said it's a common, I don't know what the figure is, but it's by far the greatest one. And that is the one that's directed by the environment. The effective processor is flexible, adaptable, easygoing, highly receptive, impressionable, unfocused, team players, and here's the big one, highly influenced by the external environment. These are people that are driven by their environment. And boy, there's people, if they're in a group of people that goes to church, they'll be memorizing scripture. If they're in a gang group, they'll be leading the gang revolt. They're going to be only as good as their environment. And we live in a world of plasticity, not the good type. This is where we're just basically blank. People don't know who they are. They don't know what they believe. I mean, most people's...
Well, that old saying, if you believe in everything, you believe in nothing. And if you don't believe anything, you'll fall for anything.
And that's where we're at now to society. I mean, look at the God thing. I mean, people don't even know how to ask. The most important question there is the God question. And most people's belief system has been imprinted. They haven't even spent time to create it. They've just adopted the world or whatever everybody else says. And the most important belief system there is that. And yet most people have never spent time figuring it out.
Well, and you know, and it's almost that contradiction too, that people want to be unique, but when I was in Minnesota, I lived in St. Paul, and I would walk through these office buildings on the way to and from work. And I would stop every evening to watch the people pour out of this one particular building. And after I'd done it for like 5 days in a row, a security guard comes over and he's like, "Can I help you?" And I was like, "I'm trying to figure out where the clone machine is." And he's like, "What are you talking about?" I said, "There's three suits that any of the men wear. It was gray, it was navy, or it was black. There were no brown suits. There were no pinstripe suits. The tie collars were yellow or a certain maroon or a certain shade of red that wasn't quite maroon. There were no blue ties. There were no, you know." And I said, "Their shoes are all the same. I mean, literally the same style of shoe." The women were a little bit more varied. And he's like, "What are you talking?" I said, and again, it's a visual thing, because what happened was it was just like this dissonance. I would walk out, and I know they all thought they were unique, but you couldn't have picked a man up out of the lineup because they were all dressed the same. Their haircuts, the glasses were similar if they had glasses, the facial hair if they had facial hair. That was probably the biggest thing. Not very many people then had facial hair. But when you see that, and yet every person would have said, well, I'm unique. No, I'm going in that box. And it's fine if you want to be in that box because it's comfortable. It's who you are. It's what you want to choose. But if you're doing it to blend in or to fit in, then inside you're damaging that innate innateness. Again, you're going to change that dialogue that says, I'm not worthy to be indifferent. Yeah.
Mark Levin calls them what? Drones. You know, we're all filling as drones. I mean, think about this. I'll give you an example. Again, don't do politically correct. Clarence Thomas. He doesn't fit in because he doesn't think the way everybody else that looks like him fits in.
Right.
So, but we're supposed to all be unique. Yet certain communities, if you don't think like they do, then you're not one of them, even though you look like them. But because you think a little differently, and yet you're right, we live in a world that pretends to be the uniqueness. No, the world wants you all to fit in. And what we got is a profile that says you don't fit in.
And
you don't fit in. You're unique.
And it's... We want to conceal that, or we think that's the flaw, or that, or we're something less. So if you do the Strength Finder and you find out, you know, I had no relationship things on the Strength Finder, which was kind of funny for this one and the different interpersonal things. But when you look at those profiles, and it's like, okay, I know I'm wired certain ways, and I know that through my career, if it was a values thing, someone told me to do something unethical or illegal, there's another job there. If, you know, just those different things. And so I would change jobs. Or if I got bored, if there was no longer a challenge, I'd go to find another job. And so, but as a consultant that owns their own business, that was the ideal training, switching industries, switching companies, doing, you know, finance or operations or whatever, retail, bank auditor, whatever it was, because I understand more and have seen more industries so that when I'm with a client, it's not how does the hotel industry work. It's like, what is the best set of benchmarks for how you want this hotel to work, from customer service to the finance part and all of those different things. And so, you know.
Well, it's a visual thing for you. I don't know if you saw that again. So what you do is map it out. So what does that look like? So what you're saying is, what does that look like?
I mean, I architecture.
It's so cool. I could see it.
Right.
Yeah.
I architecturally build company, or I design things. And
I could see it.
We were talking again. I'm redoing my website, CBC. I'm calling you out. They're doing my website. But when I was meeting with them for the design, I walked in with one of those great big post-it note wall charts with other post-it notes on it and collars and all these kind of things. And they're like, well, can we tweet this? Because it was like, you know, there's colors, there's movement. And it was what I wanted the website to look like, that landing page and how everything had to function. And it made sense. It could communicate. We still had to auditorily go through some of it for things. But that's how I think. And, you know, I can pull up the worm diagram from, you know, biology class in 10th grade and still see that diagram. So again, that visual thing.
Oh, so clear. And the cool thing in the profile, pinned it. You saw there was a lot of gray area because you got so much unlimited potential.
I'm plastic girl.
Yeah, you're plastic
stretch
girl.
Anyway,
but it was very clearly identified your visual. Boom, huge,
great.
big way. And you know, you were talking about everybody blending in. We went to London, and I love it. I can still hear it. This is the auditory. My high is the hot auditory. Keep calm. Carry on.
Right.
Keep calm. You know, there's so many euphemisms and proverbs about the nail that sticks out the farthest gets hit the hardest. If you think about it, we are going to a world, the one world economy and all that, that everybody's supposed to fit in and blend in. And you're not hearing those words, but what we're doing is we're affecting that. We're saying, no, you're unique. You're special.
Right.
And let's show you how God made you special.
Well, and I think that's what made this country so unique was that people came in from everywhere. They brought their cultures. They brought those influences. They brought the best of who they were and what was coming there. But it came together as a melting pot.
Yep.
And we kept our unique cultural identities and those kind of things. But we also found the commonalities.
The common beliefs.
The languages. The shared
American
values.
American dream.
Right.
Remember the American dream.
Anybody can have it. Everyone's equal under the law. Yes, there have been instances where people, that wasn't applied.
Of course.
There's always going to be discrimination. But I'll be honest.
As a general rule.
I've been discriminated as a woman.
As a young guy, I have been.
As a Christian.
Yep.
As a person from West Virginia, I have heard more West Virginia jokes during conference calls with my boss walking in or going to a training session. And I can remember being in Connecticut, learning a new software program. And a couple were from Canada. A couple of the attendees were from Canada, Newfoundland, Newfies. And they said, when you get back to work, you really need to report that guy to your boss. I said, that is my boss.
I know.
And they're like, Oh, you know, and it's stuff. It was, again, if you want to look at it as prejudice and discrimination, you're going to run into it.
It's
if you're too tall, you're too short, you're not good enough, yep. you're not smart enough, you're fat, you're yep. thin, you're blonde, you're not blonde, you know.
A lot of women have discriminated against me all through my lifetime. All the lists that you just said.
Yeah. But I mean, but it's that thing. And so if we want to see it as discrimination, or we just want to see it as their shortcoming,
yep.
they're blind, they can't see what's there. There's always another job. There's always another opportunity.
And here are
there's
the belief systems.
Path.
And those are the belief systems that are the priority belief system in most kids' lives. They grow up thinking they don't fit in. They're not special. They don't have gifts. They don't have talents. And what we want to do is teach people that they are smart enough, no matter where they find themselves in life. And let's be honest, Lee, our choices, our parents' choices, you know that. I mean, we're here today because of choices. But no matter where anybody finds themselves, I want them to know that they're smart enough that they can go from wherever they are to wherever they want to be. With the proper guidance and just the understanding of themselves. And this profile, Lee, will give people an understanding of themselves and allow them to take their life to whatever level they want.
So if they want to learn more about your, get your book, they want to learn yeah. more about this, learn more about the testing, give them your website.
Yeah. Well, there's two websites. One, the book. The book can be pre-ordered. It'll be out by the end of this month. It's howmanywaysmart.com. So www.howmanywaysmart.com. They can pre-order the book.
It's Ways with an S.
Yeah, Ways with an S. And then our website is Like It Matters, just like it sounds, plural, likeitmatters.net. You can see all the life-changing training we do on there, the profiles on there. Any way to access us is on there as well.
That sounds great. So if you had to give everyone listening one major tip and one secondary tip about how to live their lives, other than saying live it like it matters, yeah. what are those two tips?
Well, see, you negated me because the ultimate goal, you know, I teach a lot of goal setting. And number one is the mindset of that your life has value.
Right.
And that's why I know you give me a hard time. But when you live your life like it matters, it does. It's such a powerful life-altering belief system. There are six elements of a well-formed outcome, Lee. In other words, six things that must be present for a goal to be properly formed. And one of them is this. Okay. One of them is this. It must be within your realm of control. And so for me, I truly do believe if everybody, they got up every day and said, hey, today is a gift. I'm going to make it matter that I was given this gift called life. With that mindset, man, they go out. And the second thing is this. Learn this process. Pick yourself up. Dust yourself off and hit it again. There's no greater lesson in life. The Bible says a wise man will stumble seven times but get back up, but the wicked will stumble into ruin. And I'm going to tell you right now, fail forward, people. If you're not as successful as you want to be, it's you haven't failed enough. Take the chance, fail, fall on your face, and then pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and hit it again. And when you know who you are and why you're here and where you're going, everything else will take care of itself.
That's great. So remember, it's likeitmatters.net.
That's
if you want to get learn about how you can get your fingerprints and get your mind map and find out who you are innately wired to be, visit likeitmatters.net. And we'll be posting this podcast this afternoon if you want to listen to it again. And until next time, stay focused on the important things.